It is Acadiana's
reigning, defending, undisputed
number one sports talk station. And this is its exclusive podcast on the sport of
professional wrestling.
103.7 The Game's 20 by 20 Pro Graps podcast is scheduled for one fall. 20 minutes on everything happening inside the 20 by 20 squared circle.
Are you ready?
Ring the bell!
Welcome, everyone, to a special edition of the 20 by 20 Pro Graps podcast right after WrestleMania. I got a lot of things I want to get off my chest, and we're going to try and do it in as short as time as possible because I wind up rambling on, but I want to get this thing out. At the time of recording this, it's right before 6 o'clock, an hour before Monday Night Raw, the Raw after Mania, the most fun time of the year to be a wrestling fan because that's when all the smarks come out, and it's a whole lot of fun. But I got to say, I was absolutely floored to see everything that happened at WrestleMania 35 last night in New Jersey. Yes, it was in New Jersey, not New York. I'm sorry, I'm not a Vince McMahon. I know what's going on. I know it's New Jersey. It's not New York. But honestly, I don't care. This was a phenomenal show from top to bottom. A lot of surprises, but they were great surprises. The only bad surprise was Baron Corbin, Kurt Angle, and Corbin going over, sending Kurt Angle off into the night. And, you know, everybody was complaining about that. I can tell you exactly why that was probably the best thing WWE could have done with that angle. I'm going to start off there, and then I'll work my way over to a lot of great moments and why I feel like there's something big brewing when it comes to the future of the WWE. First off, Baron Corbin, Kurt Angle, that was a fun match. It was quick. It needed to be quick, considering the fact that you had, like, four or five more matches. That's another complaint I can talk about on another day. But when you look at it, the Baron Corbin Kurt Angle match was good for what it was. Got everybody's stuff in, and then you moved on from there. Baron Corbin gets the win with the end of days. All it took was just one. Definitely, I feel like it was the right way to do it, because here's the thing. It was Kurt Angle's last match. So if Kurt Angle beat Baron Corbin, then you wouldn't have Corbin being able to get his win back. I think this is the smartest thing to do because Kurt Angle's done. He's not going to want to get his win back. Not want to get his redemption. If he wants to, he can probably do it down the line, but I don't think it's going to wind up happening. I think Kurt Angle is officially done. He's wrestled for over 20 years, broken neck, and he had a lot of dark demons in his past, if you will. So I think there's a lot of things that, if you look at it, I think the Kurt Angle Baron Corbin match finish, maybe even a surprise, but it made sense. And also, it makes Baron Corbin one of the most hated superstars right now on the main roster. I think that's all you need to know about that. And it's going to be huge. These people hate him, but I think they hate him mainly because they want him to go away and fade away and classify himself as obsolete. I feel like what we saw with Baron Corbin now, people just hate him because he was the guy that retired Kurt Angle, even though Kurt Angle did say that he was retiring after that match regardless. There's something to say about that. And it ended on a great note with Kurt Angle getting everybody to say, you suck, you suck, you suck. Just fantastic stuff all the way around. Now we're going to look through the rest of the card as a whole. The kickoff show was pretty darn good. My only complaints were the women's battle royal using the same finish they used last year. That was a big complaint I had heading into the show. Was a little bit surprised they went that route, but you know what? It is what it is. We move on from it. Congrats goes out to Carmella, friend of the program, for winning the second annual women's battle royal that's not named after Fabulous Moolah. But like I said, still have the same trophy and use the same damn finish from last year. Go back and watch WrestleMania 34. It's the same exact finish. And then, of course, I think the biggest story coming out of it is you have Tony Nese, the new Cruiserweight champion. I was surprised at that. We talked about it on Thursdays, last week, some of the 20 by 20 programs podcast about how I thought you were going to have Buddy Murphy retain because I didn't feel like Tony Nese was ready to be like the guy on 205 Live. But you know what? I'm okay with it. That was probably the one surprise that I had. And then we have the Revival, new tag team champions, Hawkins and Ryder. Are you kidding me? Hometown people getting the win? Technically hometown, if we're going to consider New Jersey, New York, even though it's not. New Jersey is a far worse place than New York. there's shade right there going towards New Jersey. The only good thing about it is Atlantic City. But of course, we got there at MetLife Stadium. You have the Revival lose to Hawkins and Ryder. Hawkins playing possum, and also props to him for rocking the Jets old school green now, because now it's a more darker, like forest green, I would guess, would be the proper terminology for the J-E-T-S Jets. But congrats to them for doing that. And Zach Ryder's having himself one hell of a weekend. He gets engaged to Chelsea Green. For one, he was already dating Chelsea Green, so more power to him. And then gets engaged to Chelsea Green and wins the tag team titles all in about a two-day span. Props to him. Also, he had a really cool live podcast show go on last over the weekend as well. And that wound up being a big deal. So congrats to him, and well wishes to Ryder and Green. And then we've got to talk about, obviously, what everybody's talking about, and that is Seth Rollins, Brock Lesnar opening up the show. I was thrown off on that. I'll be honest with you. I did not expect that. In fact, I kind of was like, you know what? I'm going to just skip the first couple matches. Probably be, you have your Samoa Joe, Rey Mysterio match. You have something fun to open up the main card show, something entertaining. But you open it up with Brock Lesnar, Seth Rollins, Brock Lesnar being the curtain jerker. That was a phrase I never thought I'd hear in my life. And I was talking to somebody this morning, and they were saying, you know, the show wasn't necessarily like that great. It was definitely, the match was too quick. It was weird to see it open up the show. It was weird to see it open up the show, but he was talking about the match being too quick. Brock Lesnar works best in small doses because he's a bigger guy. He's not necessarily able to wrestle a 20, 30 minute match nowadays. Back in his prime, when he was wrestling with Kurt Angle 19, he could wind up doing it. But I feel like the Brock Lesnar now, it's a lot like what we see when you're playing a Street Fighter game or a Tekken or Dragon Ball FighterZ, which I've been playing a lot off on my own behind the scenes. It's quick, fast paced. You hit all your special moves right out the gate, and that's it. Like, it's fun as all hell because you know they're just breaking out all the finishers right from the jump street. And of course, Brock Lesnar had to get hit in the ding-ding and then curb stomped three times for Seth Rollins to wind up coming away with the win. So congrats to Seth Rollins. It was well-deserved. The man slayed the beast to open up the match. I cannot wait to see Monday Night Rollins in full effect tonight. That's going to be awesome. Can't wait to catch Monday Night Raw for that. And then you had here and there, like every other match was just, it was expected. Usos expected to retain. I didn't think the Bar was going to wind up winning it again. Ricochet and Aleister Black, they didn't tease it like everybody thought they would, especially after losing on Raw, losing at NXT, and then you lose at SmackDown, but then lose a SmackDown tag title match at WrestleMania. Everybody thought they were going to wind up like teasing the breakup, and then you have a feud. You didn't, because you didn't have them eat the pinfall, and that was interesting. And again, I kind of skipped the opening, like, 20 minutes of the main show. I wound up watching afterwards and enjoyed the hell out of it. But then I jumped in. It was right as the Iconics, the Fatal 4-Way Women's Tag Team match. And that was really good. That was creative and interesting. I enjoyed the hell out of that. Largely because the Iconics deserve to win. They deserve to win. Honestly, I felt like they should have been the first champions. And then you have Bayley and Sasha Chase. It should be a transitional thing. Because you want to try and put over as many people as possible, and the way they put over the Iconics a couple weeks ago alluded to everything. He didn't do it the week before, so nobody expected them to wind up getting the win. They thought Bayley and Sasha would retain. I'm one of those people that was in that camp, thought Bayley and Sasha was going to retain. But they wound up giving it to the Iconics in a pretty unique finish. It wasn't like the most creative finish in the world. You had the blind tag, her slapping her on the butt. As she's going for the glam slam, the referee, awareness 99, by the way, on that, being able to catch that, and then the Iconics slide in for the pin and the win to win the tag team titles. Fun match, entertaining. Could have been a little bit longer, but you know what? It is what it is. I enjoyed it. Also, Shane McMahon, The Miz, holy crap, that was amazing. And also, that was probably my favorite finish of the night, because you have the superplex leading to The Miz getting pinned by Shane McMahon, because Shane McMahon's on top after the superplex spot ends. Which, by the way, was really kind of sort of dangerous. It wasn't the spot me and Cody were talking about on the previous episode of 20 by 20. How he, what kind of thing is he going to jump off now? it wasn't that high, and also it was pretty much cardboard they landed on. You could tell it wasn't like they didn't break through a whole bunch of wood. It looked like it looked very cardboardy, looked very hokey. But you know what? When you got a 50-year-old man do it, taking that kind of bump, it probably still hurts like hell. And then we got to wind up talking about, of course, Kofi Kingston, Daniel Bryan. This was the match of the night in my book and the second best match in the weekend. And I'll talk about it a lot more in 20 by 20 Progress Podcast, the full-blown one, when we talk about WrestleMania, NXT TakeOver, Ring of Honor Supercard, which was okay. I felt like it was more New Japan than Ring of Honor. Again, I'll dive into my details on that later in a future podcast, but this is all about WrestleMania. Daniel Bryan, Kofi Kingston was the antithesis of what you wanted in a WrestleMania show. I felt like at this point, and me and Cody talked about this a lot in the last couple weeks, about how WrestleMania is like 7 freaking hours long. You can make it 4 hours long over the course of 2 days, and I think people would be happy about it. People wouldn't be losing their damn minds over it. Me and Cody talked about this in great detail. How do you do it? Well, I want to get to that a little more on Wednesday because I really want to save this conversation for later. With WrestleMania 35, this could have been the ending of everything because everybody is like adulation. Everybody is loving the exact second Kofi Kingston comes out and wins the world title. Everybody's like immediately over like Rover Kofi Kingston. It was probably one of my favorite matches in main roster WWE since CM Punk John Cena stole the show in 2013 on a random episode of Monday Night Raw, which if you haven't checked that out yet, it's the one with the pile driver. It's a TLDR version of that's one of my favorite recent matches because, of course, I mean, Money in the Bank 2011 is an absolute masterpiece, and people know me well enough, they know how much I love that match. Everything overall about like Daniel Bryan, Kofi Kingston, the storytelling, the pacing, how everything worked, the suddenness of the Trouble in Paradise, the way Eric Rowan was running interference towards the end, how everything, what the pacing and everything worked. I feel like this was probably a 4.5 star match. It wasn't 5 star. Because again, I just felt like it was 4.5. I don't know why. I guess it's because of the fact that it was just not like a technical masterpiece. But you could tell there were elements in there that could have made it a 5-star match if it had gone on maybe like 2 or 3 minutes longer, and you have like Kofi Kingston try and out Matt wrestle Bryan at the beginning. That would have been fun because you never know, you've never seen Kofi Kingston Matt wrestle, so you don't know if he can wind up hanging on his own in this kind of situation. So it was really fun to kind of see Daniel Bryan and Kofi Kingston go at it. The way it ended was perfect. Daniel Bryan loses. Kofi Kingston's your new WWE champion. I absolutely loved every minute of it. I was on the edge of my seat the entire time. And here's the thing. Seth Rollins, I felt like it was a lock. Becky Lynch felt like a lock. Kofi, not so much. It felt like that was the one that was going to wind up looting everybody and everybody's going to be upset afterwards because of, well, you know, nobody can break the glass ceiling. It finally happened. It broke the glass ceiling, and it was amazing. And then you have Samoa Joe and Rey Mysterio last like a minute, and that was amazing as well. So because it didn't need to be like a 30-second, it didn't need to be like a 30-minute masterpiece, especially with Rey Mysterio apparently being injured. They wound up just saying, you know, we're going to get all our gimmicks in and get out and be like a minute, and it was hilarious. But it was awesome at the same time because it made Samoa Joe look more like a badass. Especially as the U.S. champion. You can about imagine he winds up doing that more often, having these like quick matches. It makes him look dominant against everybody. And that can wind up being a great thing for the U.S. title down the line. And then we go to, what else we had in this kind of the card that was, oh, about Dave Bautista, Triple H. Dave Bautista actually retired recently, so congrats to him for a fantastic WWE career. That was a fun match. Mad Max Fury Road entrance for Triple H. Bautista coming out like a Hollywood star with the SUV and almost falling on his ass getting into the ring, which was funny as hell. Just everything about that match was amazing, especially the opening minutes. You have your boy Triple H use, like, I don't know what it was on. on Batista to break his fingers. Pete Dunne was probably looking at this way. All right, we're using this spot for the next Walter match, which, by the way, that's another thing we'll get into in the next 20 by 20. And then we have Batista's nose ring being pulled out with some needle nose pliers, which was a gruesome spot. And also, I think Triple H is a nostril pervert. And that was, and HBK's like on the spot commentary, but like, oh, kids, you shouldn't get those kind of piercings. I about died laughing because I'm like, this is exactly what Shawn Michaels is doing commentary. And it was the funniest damn thing ever. Loved it. Loved everything about this match. Triple H winning was a surprise, but I didn't necessarily like say, okay, that's cool. You know, move on. I enjoyed the hell out of it. It was fun. It was definitely the typical Triple H plotting like 20 minute match, but it was definitely well worth it. You also had the Intercontinental title match of the Demon Finn Balor up against Bobby Lashley, who had these really cool contact lenses. Enjoyed the hell out of that match. It was definitely full of entertaining spots. The finishes were there. I enjoyed everything about it. I can tell you right now, there were so many great matches that I enjoyed. But seeing Finn Balor get the win and be Intercontinental Champion for the second time by using the Demon, it was well done. It keeps the Demon extremely strong, especially the way he kicked out of not only one spear in the ring, but one spear that he wound up getting speared out of the ring by. And that was amazing, that spot by Bobby Lashley. That's the Lashley we need to see. That's the Lashley we've needed to see for quite a while. And of course, your main event, Becky Lynch, Charlotte Flair, Ronda Rousey. Charlotte Flair, a fantastic entrance, shades of her dad. I believe this was in Charlotte, North Carolina at it wasn't a Starcade. It was one of the bigger events, though, an outside Coliseum where the helicopter kind of lands right in front of MetLife Stadium. And then she walks down the aisle. But mind you, it's a longer gap between because, of course, you had to get Ronda Rousey to start things off with Joan Jett, which was a cool entrance. But man, the song Joan Jett performed, Bad Reputation, it felt like it was way too fast and everything was kind of out of sync. It felt like when you were playing Guitar Hero and you weren't hitting the notes just right, it was slightly off. I don't know why, but it was. Charlotte comes out, fantastic. Becky Lynch, the state of her hair, mate, in the words of Jay Hunter and all the guys over at OSW Review, the state of her hair. It was very poofy, very 80s feel to it. And it worked in the beginning, but it's the way as the match progressed, her hair got bigger and bigger. It got frizzier and frizzier until like eventually it looked like Kane's hair circa 2001. If you remember the mask and the hair, where it was just like very frizzy and just kept expanding like a chia pet. And it was amazing. But the entire match with those three, it was fantastic. A very brutal bump on the mat at one point during the match by Ronda Rousey. I was surprised she actually got up from that because that looked like she had landed on her freaking neck. Thankfully, she was okay. And, you know, it was definitely an entertaining match from start to finish. The table spot kept getting teased. By the way, tables in WWE, they cannot break, which is incredibly crazy to think about. Because it feels like every year, like the Spanish announced table breaks. That did not break amazingly. The table was definitely in full effect all night long. Charlotte Flair didn't break the table. Maybe it's shouldn't thrown to the front, you know, that whole thing. Definitely a fun match from start to finish. Except the finish was a little bit off, but here's the thing. People are going to complain about it. I loved it because of the fact that it tells a story that you wind up going back to 6 to 7 months from now, whenever Ronda Rousey does come back, if she comes back at all at SummerSlam or Survivor Series or what have you, whenever Becky Lynch has to face her one-on-one in a bigger pay-per-view venue and in a one-on-one match as the main event of a SummerSlam or maybe even next year's WrestleMania, because you want to be able to build it up to basically say, you did not win that match. I won that match. I should be the champion still. I should hold both belts. I'd probably hold every single belt in this company if it wasn't for you stopping me when you did. And it made sense. It made utmost sense to have it go the way that it did, to have the finish happen the way that it did. Because it tells a story and it makes something more interesting to talk about down the line. And my last statement before I kind of wrap up the 20 by 20 Programs podcast, because we are going up against it. I can't believe I managed to talk 20 minutes about this without bringing up one of the big topics that I'll probably want to bring back up on the full edition of the 20 by 20 Programs podcast, breaking down everything that happened. I enjoyed WrestleMania 35 because it didn't feel like it was a part-timer festival. You didn't need to have all your part-timers show up and be involved in one way or another on a show. Every part-timer that was involved lost, except for Triple H, but it's because it was a part-timer, part-timer. I'm not necessarily counting that. So you had Brock Lesnar, and you have Ronda Rousey, who was not necessarily as much of a part-timer as her counterpart Lesnar was, but it still stands to say that Brock Lesnar and Ronda Rousey losing, that's huge because it shows that maybe Vince McMahon is all in on having wrestlers like Kofi Kingston, Daniel Bryan, Seth Rollins, workhorses, kind of lead the way into this new generation 2.0. Again, that could change in like a month from now. But I feel like the way that he did it, where it wasn't, oh, hey, you know, let's have Undertaker involved in a match. First time in almost 20 years that hadn't happened. Let's not have John Cena get involved in a match. Let's have him do a great segment with Elias and just do one spot and that's it. Shane McMahon, he won, but he won to further a story. Triple H, Batista, it really didn't matter who won or lost that. It would have been great to see Triple H lose it just so we don't have to see him anymore involved in any more of these part-timer matches. It is what it is. I'm not going to hate that at all. It was a great show all the way around, and it felt like maybe, just maybe, we're moving towards a new era in WWE where it's not necessarily as reliant on part-time guys, guys who are wrestling once or twice a year and all this stuff. I absolutely enjoyed the ever-living hell out of it. WrestleMania 35 may have been one of my favorite shows in terms of WrestleManias since X7, because from top to bottom, that card was fantastic. Everything lived up to the hype, and you ended the show on a high note. And the way it was, beginning, middle, end, it was very much like a sandwich. Both those breads were really, really good, but that ham, that cheese, everything in between was spectacular, especially when you had Kofi with the WWE Championship on his own, relatively clean as a whistle. Of course, he had the Eric Rowan interference, but it was right in the middle of the ring, 1, 2, 3, and it was amazing to see Kofi Kingston finally get his moment along with a lot of other African-American superstars, because he's the first one to ever hold the WWE title. It was emotional, everything about it. That's what wrestling is all about, and it was phenomenal. Thanks for listening to the 20 by 20 Prograps podcast. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review, 6 stars if you're in the Tokyo Dome, and of course, the 20 by 20 Prograps podcast. It's available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, whatever the hell you wind up using for your podcasting purposes. Be sure to subscribe. And also, like I said, leave us a 5-star rating, 6 stars if you're in the Tokyo Dome, and the 20 by 20 Prograps podcast. It is so over, dog.